Well, he sent me down, sent me to the store, and she'd say, son, I want you to get some dry salt bacon. Does that mean anything to you? Is dry salt bacon the same as hog jaw? It's not. Actually, dry salt bacon was all fat and as salty as could be. You just can't imagine how salty dry salt bacon was. It was the cheapest part of the cheapest animal in the world. And we could get enough dry salt bacon for a nickel. They had a little slabs of dry salt bacon just stuck over there in the corner before they'd throw them away. And for a nickel, you get enough dry salt bacon to feed two people for a good night, five or six meals. And my mother would get a knife out and cut that dry salt bacon, and then she would fry it. And then after she fried it, she would leave the grease in, get some flour, and put the flour in and make some, we called it cream gravy. Maybe you call it thickened gravy. We call it cream gravy. I do not know anything any better than thickened gravy. I've often thought if I ever drowned, I'd like to drown in thickened gravy. You gotta go. What a way to go. until you've eaten some real old-fashioned southern hot biscuits. Baptized. Not christened. Baptized. In thickened gravy. You've really not been fully born again. I often laugh when I realize how people eat nowadays and think they're in poverty. For a nickel, we could eat five meals. Just a little flour, dry salt bacon, that's all we needed. All you got to do is wad some flour up, stick in the oven, make some biscuits. A little more than that. Then some dry salt bacon and some thickened gravy. But as I relive those days, the thing that I'm applying to the message this morning is the bacon. I used to love to eat dry salt bacon, because they left the rind on the bacon. I never understood why they take the rind off of meat. Did you ever have hog killing time? How many ever were around a hog killing time? Thank you. What's the best thing about a hog at hog killing time? Tell me out loud. Cracklings. You got it. That's right. Cracklings. And cracklings, basically, the rind is what it is. And, not the kind you buy in a vending machine, those stupid things, never saw a hog. But, you smell the hounds, I thought you were against pork. I am against it, but it's delicious. But my favorite part of the dry salt bacon, or hog killing time, was the rind. You know why? Because you could chew it and chew it and chew it and chew it. To me, the most stupid thing in the world eats bacon without the rind. Because it's gone. I mean, you know, a piece of bacon, it's just gone. I mean, it almost evaporates. But you get you a good thick piece, fry it good and crisp, leave the rind on. And listen, it'll outlast chewing gum. Just chew it and chew it and chew it and chew it. And that's what I want to do with my life. I want to take every day and chew it and chew it and chew it and realize how good it is now. We're strange creatures. We plan what we're going to do tomorrow and lament what we failed to do yesterday. And yet we never seem to do today what we planned yesterday we'd do today. And what we wish tomorrow we had done today. Beloved, today is that tomorrow we planned yesterday. It is that tomorrow to which we've pointed, and of which we dreamed, and for which we planned. And today is that yesterday that we will remember tomorrow. I'm willing to talk about the good old days, but I'd rather be Jack Hiles, 52 years of age, on January 28, 1979, than to have been anybody else who ever lived on any other day in the history of this world. Somebody said, wish you could live your life again? Nope. No. Why? Because I'm enjoying being 52. To me, 52 is the perfect age. Nothing like it. Nothing. You're young enough to enjoy life, old enough to get sympathy for being old. You can't beat that. I like it. I wouldn't be 30 again, because if I were 30 again, I'd be as dumb as you 30-year-old folks are. I don't want to be that dumb anymore. You see, I've decided not to wait till tomorrow to cherish today. I've decided to take today and savor it and feast on it and enjoy it and be conscious I'm enjoying it, and not wait till someday when I talk about the good old days in past. This, to me, this is a good new day. Now, today. I don't want to have to wait till I'm old or older and say, what could have been done more? She lies in state this morning, or will someday. And you touch the eyes as you pass by the casket. You touch the eyes with your hands, the eyes that saw you first. You note the body that was your first dwelling place. You touch the hands that were once your Florence Nightingale. You see the breast not heaving that were your first dining table. You reach down and kiss the quietened lips that spake your first, I love you. And you fondle the ears that no longer can hear. The ears that bent at midnight toward your room or toward your bed to listen for your cry. And you notice the arms folded across the breast, arms that first embraced you. And you notice the face that received the first kiss that you gave to anybody, and the cheek that were warm with tears for you. You pause and weep and leave and pause again and remember and then walk away. And all of a sudden, for the first time in your life, you've grown up. You're grown now. Mama's gone. Then you ask the question, what could have been done more? And then you have the rest of your life to lament, I wish I'd done more. Or rejoice, I could not have done more. What could have been done more? Too late then. It's too late. She'll never feel your kiss again. In this world, she'll never hear your I love you again. You can never send her a check through the mail again, nor send her a card, nor go see her, nor embrace her, nor do something kind for her. All you can say is, what could have been done more? Wouldn't it be a wonderful thing if we could somehow or other escape this depravity for a few moments, occasionally, and just do now more while we can do more? He's crippled. The hands that once were greasy from having toiled hard at the job to provide your needs are now paralyzed. The face that once was rugged with the toil of a lifetime for providing your needs is now out of shape. And the voice that once corrected you can now only be a groan. And the words that once you heard are now mumbled, for Dad is old and maybe had a stroke. And you sit there and look at him, and all of a sudden you feel like you're grown. Those arms that once were your refuge and your pavilion are now unable to protect you. And those shoulders on which you wept and where you deposited your tears, those shoulders that were everything from a pavilion of safety to an altar of repentance, are suddenly drooped. And those feet that once provided for you and those arms that once held you are unable. And you somehow feel like that even though he's paralyzed now, he's still Daddy, and I feel better because he's here, but you know in your heart there's nothing that he can do to protect you or care for you or provide for you anymore. And then you look at him and you say, what could have been done more? I cannot forget ever that young man in St. Margaret's Hospital whose father had just died. His body was lying there lifeless, and that young man jumped up and ran across the room and leaned on his dad, or threw himself on his dad's lifeless form, and picked his dad's arms up and put his dad's arms around him as they hung lifeless around him, and said, hug me, Daddy, hug me, Daddy, hug me, Daddy. And then he put his lips against his daddy's lips and said, kiss me, Daddy, kiss me, Daddy, kiss me, Daddy. Too late then. Sad that we're so depraved, we do not have the character to live today and serve today and give today and win today and work today and love today. Today is that tomorrow that you planned for and saved for and dreamed of. It's here. Now live it. Enjoy it. Do that which you ought to do. How tragic, how tragic, how tragic. People sitting in this room right now, their hearts are trying about to burst, and they're trying to keep the tears from flowing now, and in some cases they're wiping their eyes with tears, tears of remorse, wishing you had another chance to do to mother what you ought to have done, and do for mother what you ought to have done, and care for mother like you should have cared, and do for dad what you ought to do. And oh, those tomorrows are all gone now, and yesterday's tomorrows are all today's yesterdays. And now then you look back and you say, what could have been done more? What could have been done more? What could have been done more? Isn't she lovely? Look at her. In her wedding gown. Isn't she beautiful? You remember at the kissing time, when she's pronounced as the wife of some fine young man, and you sit here on the front and look up at that lovely bride who calls you mother, and you see her as she places a kiss or receives a kiss after she's pronounced the wife of a young man. And you remember that at the kiss, when those lips puckered only for you, you look at those beautiful eyes and remember their wideness as they stared at the Christmas tree and the cake half eaten that was left for Santa the night before. You watch her graceful walk as she walks in her gown to the platform And suddenly, you see that first step she took. And remember how she stumbled on her first step. You hear her repeat the vows and remember her first words. And wonder where the days went. Wonder how somebody could become 20 years of age in 3 weeks. And then you look at those, the graceful walk, and you remember this little piggy went to market, and this little piggy stayed home, and this little piggy had roast beef, and this little piggy had none, and this little piggy cried wee, wee, wee all the way home. You look down and find those little piggies are full-grown hogs now. And then you see her lovely form as she stands there. And as she gives herself to a young man. And remember when that little form was about that long. And all of a sudden every daily bath becomes a holy worship hour. And that little bathinet or that little lavatory where you bathe there becomes a sacred altar. And that bedroom where she slept becomes a shrine. You wipe a tear and fake a smile. And sitting there on the front, you ask the question, what could have been done more? You'd planned to teach her, but you never did. You got too busy. You'd planned to train her, but you never did. You got too busy. You'd planned to get close to her, but you never did. You got too busy. And the dreams that you had for today, on yesterday, have never quite materialized. And now, you wish you had yesterday all over again, and that once more, today could again be tomorrow, so that you would have a chance to live to yesterday over again, as today, so you would not sit there and lament the fact that you forgot to do today what yesterday you planned to do. Now in some cases, it's too late. They're gone. Ah, but let me tell you, my dear mother, if you still cradle in your arms a little one, if you still hear the feet of little ones as they pitter-patter across your bedroom floor, if you still have them at the table sitting there, make the use of it now. Don't put off the plans you made. Don't wait till tomorrow. Today. Live it today. Teach today. Train today. Love today. Get close today. Tomorrow is so near. And you look back and say, what could have been done more? He did not know it was his last sermon. He'd been preaching for many years. He full well knew that someday he would preach his last one, but he did not know it was his last one. I've heard the last sermons of many great preachers. Dr. Beauchamp Vick and I shared the platform together in Rochester, Minnesota, Rochester, Michigan, Rochester Hills Baptist Church. We shared the platform together two nights. He sat beside me for a few minutes, went up to speak, and I sat beside his son-in-law. Thank you, son-in-law. And we fellowshipped and listened to Dr. Vick, and I reached over to his son-in-law and I said, never heard Dr. Vick any better. It's the best I'd ever heard him. He preached on heaven. I heard him preach on heaven before, but never quite like that night. The streets were more golden. The gates were whiter pearl. The gowns, the robes were pure white. The fellowship was sweeter, and perfection was more perfect, and righteousness more righteous, and good was better, and the shouts were louder, hosannas were sweeter, and loved ones were dearer than I'd ever heard him preach before. I did not know that as Dr. Vick walked down off the platform, and I walked up, and I shook his hand and said, Dr. Vick, that's the best I ever heard you. I did not know that's the last one. Nor did he. He did not know that he would be sitting at his desk in Springfield, Missouri soon, and slump over. You're taken by angels to the presence of His Christ. I don't want to wait till I get there and say, what more? What could have been done more? I don't want to wait till someday and look back and realize, as an old man, unable to preach anymore, maybe. I don't want to look back to my ministry here and say, what could have been done more? And that's why, ladies and gentlemen, God knows this is true. I give it my best. That's the truth. I do not know how to give it any more than I give it. Why? Because I don't have yesterday anymore. And I will never have tomorrow. But I have today, now, living in history, living in the greatest soul-winning church since Jerusalem, and maybe ever. Do you know what, ladies and gentlemen? Do you know the other day I got curious to know how many folks had walked the aisle in this church in the last 19 and a half years? Do you know how many? Over 190,000 people have walked this aisle professing faith in Christ in the last 20 years. Think about that. Almost twice as many folks as live in Hammond. Do you know, in these 20 years, in this baptistry, or one like it over here, do you know, over 60,000 people have been baptized. It's never happened before. You know, we talk about Pentecost and 3,000 folks being saved on Pentecost. We had in the First Baptist Church Hammond, on one of our big days, we had 9,000 people saved in one day, over three times as many as were saved on Pentecost. I'm simply saying, if you want to sit here and sleep, go ahead. If you want to sit here and yawn, go ahead. But not me. My eyes are going to stay open. And my mind is going to stay alert. And my heart is going to stay blessed. And I'm going to hear and listen and work and be a part. I'm not going to live in history and someday recall the good old days. I'm going to chew on it now and enjoy it now and love now and work now and serve now. Why? I don't want to wait someday and say, what could have been done more? What could have been done more? I sat last Thursday night back in the back of an auditorium in the Atlanta, Georgia area, a few miles from the airport in Forest Park, Georgia. Fine-looking young man, 31 years of age, stood up, called the service to order. Made the announcements, took the offering, pastor that great church there, school with 500 or 600 students, brilliant young man, remembered when he was 11 years of age here at our church. Recalled he and I, as a teenager, we'd go soul winning together. He introduced the next speaker, his brother, Terry Smith. Terry spoke before I both nights. I never heard a better sermon. I never heard a finer preacher in my life, and I've heard them all. As Terry Smith stood and spoke that night, with all of the power a young man could have and all of the grace and all of the ability and all of the wisdom of a man far his senior. And I remembered when he was 13, 14. We went down on Cane Street down here and won a soul to Christ together. Remembered his childhood. My preacher boys, I'm not going to wait till I'm old and gone before I realize what God is doing. I'm not going to squander my life, waste it, and say, mañana, mañana. Mañana, tomorrow, not me, buddy, today, I have now, I don't have tomorrow, I may not have tomorrow, but I have today, and I'm not going to wait till tomorrow and say, what could have been done more? She sits in a rest home, remembering her life, asking herself, what could have been done more? The graduates in May will walk down the aisle. Our college senior class will stand up and take his diplomas one at a time. Teachers, administrators, professors, are you going to have to ask yourself the question, what could have been done more? Two or three students said to me recently, we didn't have class today. We didn't have class today. Teacher was out. That's a disgrace. First place, it's cheap. Students come pay their tuition. They don't come pay their tuition and stay home. They come pay to go to class. Very idea. Cheating a student out of what's his. If you're not going to show up for a class, then write a check to the student, each one of the members, and give them some of their money back. Don't wait till we say goodbye to them and realize we've not done our best. While they're here in those brief 4 years between matriculation and graduation, in those 4 years that God has let pass through our halls, the precious young people, He sends us in God's name. Let's give our best now. Just a few months. Our high school seniors will walk in cap and gown, take their places here at the front. We'll say goodbye to them. Off to college. Off to marriage. Off to the service. Off to business. Scatter around the world. Somebody asked me sometimes, if you had 190,000 people saved, where are they? I'll tell you where they are, bless God. They're all over this world. That's where they are. Everywhere I go, I don't care where I... Listen, I got off the airplane at the airport Thursday night, and who met me? Rudy Vesmar, one of our kids, grew up in this church. Who's Rudy Vesmar? Teacher at that school down there. I walked in the service that night, and the first person I saw, who was it? Debbie Vesmar. Used to be Debbie Healy, one of our girls that grew up in the church down there. Looked up on the platform, and there was Tom and Terry Smith, who grew up in the church here. That's just one little town in one little part of a whole wide world. I never go anywhere without seeing them. All across the world, people who've been saved here. And by the way, all across this area, anywhere you go to church in this area, you'll find folks who've been saved here. I spoke in the Salt Village church the other night, just one night over there on a cold, wintry, icy night. I spoke at Salt Village, you wouldn't know how many people came up and said, I was saved at First Baptist Church of Hammond. And that's the way it is all around the world. I'm simply saying that while we have these young people, look, ladies and gentlemen, they'll be gone after a while. They're just ours for a season. And before we know it, they're gone in God's name. Let's don't rear a generation of children and say, what could have been done more? Let's say we did all we could do. Few months, your Sunday school class will leave your classroom. The year will be over, and you'll stand with tearful eye. For most of them, you'll shout for one or two, probably. As they walk out the door of the classroom, they've sat under your teaching for a year, and some of you teachers haven't been there 40 Sundays out of the 52. It's a disgrace. It's a disgrace. And you will say, what could have been done more? Folks, listen to me a minute. My life is a strange one. Funny thing. I went down to Florida to preach Monday and Tuesday and preach Monday night. And Dr. Russell Anderson was on the program with me. Preached Monday night. I preached Tuesday morning. The pastor is so gracious. He loves me. I've influenced his ministry, he says. He loves me, and he wanted to give me a few hours of rest. He had planned it. One of his members owns a big yacht. It takes $270 to rent it for a day. He wanted me to go out on it for a while. Russell Anderson and John Byder and I were there together, and we went out. And they took us deep sea fishing for 4 hours. That's nearest thing I've had to a vacation, 12 years, 4 hours. We sat there, and John Bowder, as soon as we hit the water, John got sick. Soon as the thing left the dock. We fished for 4 hours. He fed the fish for us. 4 hours. Never saw a man sick. He never touched a rod or a reel, never touched a pole. He just regurgitated. And in passing, I might add that I caught one 65-pound fish and one 67.5-pound fish. I just say that humbly in passing. And then quite a few smaller tuna fish. But I got back after it was all over, 4 hours is all, left at 10:30, got back at 2:30. I went back to Maroon. I felt so guilty. Really, I did. I told the pastor, I don't feel much like preaching tonight. I don't feel spiritual. I took 4 hours to play. I felt so guilty. I felt like asking God to forgive me. Taking 4 hours to play. But I'm not going to wait till the doors are locked back yonder. Our schools are padlocked. Our freedoms are gone. Our grandchildren are taken from the laps of our children. I'm not going to wait. And look at my country. Another Cambodia. Another South Vietnam. Another Korea. I'm not going to wait and say what could have been done more. I'll be honest. I'm tired of traveling. Sick of motels. I'm tired of being most of my life around folks I don't know very well. I'm a little tired of being lonely. But I'm driven. To what? I'm driven because I know that God has given me the ears of the preachers of this country. And I'm not going to wait till I'm dead or dying and our country's gone and say, what could have been done more? I'm going to give it all I've got. I was out in Alaska the other day. Good night. I do not know when I ever didn't want to preach. But I didn't want to, really. I didn't want... The truth is, I barely got there in time to preach, and if you let me confess it, I sort of hoped I'd get there late. Isn't that awful? I just sort of wished the plane would get there a little bit late, and I'm ashamed to admit it, but so I wouldn't have to preach. I got there just at the end of Ray Batem. Dr. Ray Batem pastors the largest church in California. Used to live up here in Holland, Michigan. Drive down here on Sunday night as a teenage boy just to hear me preach. Ray Batem was finishing a sermon and told this story. I was trying to collect my thoughts and get enough energy. It was 1 o'clock in the morning here, and Ray Batem told this story. He told how he was called to pastor a church out in California. They'd have one or two people saved a Sunday. Running about 200 Sunday school, and he thought he was doing real well. And somebody said, I'll pay you away if you go to Jack Hiles' pastor school. And he said, well, if you'll pay me away, I live there in Holland, Michigan. I get to be close to home anyway. I don't care about going to pastor school, but I'd like to go home. So he sort of flippantly took the money and bought a ticket and came to pastor school. And he said he came and he sat and he listened. And God got a hold of him. He said he got on the plane to go back. He couldn't think of anything. But I've got to do it. He tried to sleep that night and he couldn't sleep. He said his whole life was changed. That little church of 200 people now runs 3,000 people. Biggest church in Southern California. He told that story. Man, by the time he got through, I wanted to say, man, sit down. I got preach! My gun was loaded. My appetite to preach was whetted. I preach. What are you going to do? Wait till she's gone? Wait till he's dead? Wait till she's married? Wait till they've graduated? Wait till you're old? And say, what could have been done more? Not me. Not me. For today is that tomorrow for which I dreamed yesterday. And that yesterday, I'll remember tomorrow. Our Heavenly Father,